Hello and welcome. It's the pleasure of Power to Change to present Family Life Today each week, Monday through Friday at this time. We'd love you to contact this station and tell them how much you appreciate hearing Family Life Today. Well, let's get started on today's edition.
So we got Timmy Loth, Sean McDowell back in the studio talking about ending the stalemate, having meaningful conversations with people that we have different opinions with. What's really interesting is you guys don't agree on everything.
No.
And you wrote a book together.
We did.
So we've already talked about pre-conversation. We need to talk about, okay, when we're in the conversation, how do we have this? We have kids coming home from college this month. The election just happened. Your person might not have got elected. That could cause, or they might have, you know, I don't know.
Your kids may not want to come home for Christmas or Thanksgiving because of the political climate in your house. Oh. And so we're navigating that as parents. What's the best way to go about these conversations?
How do we have healthy conversations?
So here's a question for you. If you're worried about your kids coming home this Thanksgiving, do you want them coming back home in 5 Thanksgivings? Mm. Do you want them coming back in 20 Thanksgivings with your grandkids? You've got to play the long game when it comes to communication. And if they're afraid to come home now, they could cut ties and things could go south for a long time. Mm. You can prepare your heart and you can prepare your mind. One thing I heard Kara Powell at Fuller Theological Seminary say, she asks her kids all the time, she says, tell me what you believe that mom and dad still believe. Tell me something that you now don't believe that we believe. And why? And just listen. Don't get defensive. Try to understand. That's a powerful thing to do in the right time and the right way with your kids.
So don't correct them when they say, I don't believe this anymore. You don't try and convince them. You just
listen. At least not initially.
Yeah.
Step number one is understand. But I also want to know the backstory. What led to you changing this? Was there an experience that you had? Tim's got a great chapter on bricolage, which is how we put together our belief systems. And we'd all like to think that they're lined up by analyzing evidence and looking at the data. That's not true. It's relationships, it's experiences, it's hurts. So if you've changed your views, could it be for some kids, they just want to have their identity at something that's different from their parents. So if a kid changed, I want to know, was it a professor? Was it a roommate? Was it an experience? Tell me the backstory long before I try to correct their beliefs.
Have you guys had those conversations with your kids?
Yeah. I'll be somewhat discreet, but I will say one thing. Don't freak out when they're talking to you. You can freak out in the back bedroom with your spouse. But I remember early on, one of our kids, I want to say this was elementary school. Remember, list the 10 most important things in your life. And mom and dad, the teacher said, is like, it's always number one. But then God was on the list. And one of our kids came home with the list and God was 5th. And he literally, I'll never forget this. He literally said, I know you wanted that to be higher, but it's not. Could we freak out? Yeah, in the back bedroom. But when we failed, we should homeschool, you know, something like that. But don't freak out in front of them. This is what we would say as professors. You're getting one little slice. It's a photograph. It's not the end product because they're in process. They're wrestling. And I want to teach them to be good thinkers. So I would say this. When the child comes home and you're going to have a family conversation, maybe process the election. I wouldn't do that spontaneously. If it does come up spontaneously, like, hey, how'd you all vote? I'd be like, yeah, we're not doing that. I would say, hey, what a great question. 2 nights from now, let's order pizza. It'd be kind of fun to go around and say, if you want to, how I voted and why. But give me at least 2 days to prepare. And then in our house, there needs to be food. There needs to be a distraction. You know, we're all not just going to sit down at a table and say, okay, go first. That's too much pressure. So we would have pizza or something because you can't just have the intensity build and build and build. There has to be like distractions, good distractions. Knowing the Mealhoff family, you'd have to construct that. You'd have to prepare for that and carefully do it. We have one whole chapter on how to construct a conversation very quickly. One, ask them what they honestly think. I'm trying not going to get defensive. Second, now why do you think that? The third one is so important. Here's why I agree. You and I voted differently. But here's where I agree, where I could see why you voted the way you did. That made sense to me. Find the common ground. And then the fourth one is ask clarifications, more questions, and then you know it's going to get flipped. And now you're going to go through that same process with me. So you're going to literally go through those four questions. We find that that gives speed bumps so the conversation doesn't get derailed.
And I would add this. If you're in a family where your kids are married, you're bringing in-laws into the situation that have a different upbringing, maybe different views, maybe a different way that conflict and even conversations are taking place. I think we could have a conversation with our kids. They all know they're incredibly loved. We're going to love them no matter what or what their views are. We're going to love them. However, our daughter-in-laws may not be as secure in that love. And so we're way more cautious now in having some of the conversations because they may not understand, like, man, you can say anything and I'm going to love you. We can say that, but we don't know their background. Have you guys, do you see that at all? Could that be something that...
Well, I don't have any sons-in-laws or daughter-in-laws.
They're much younger than us, honey.
I know that
it's,
you are.
It's theoretical for me, but I think my response would be, why do we freak out in those settings? And I think one reason is we take it personally.
Yes.
We feel like we have failed,
yeah,
which may have nothing to do with it, which makes it about us, not about them. And why not freak out? Because number one, we want to keep the conversation going for a while. I'd much rather have my kid come tell me and say, hey, I'm not a Christian.
Yeah.
And keep the conversation going. If you freak out, you shut that down. Mm. And also for the reason you just mentioned, that if I freak out, does that communicate that my love for you is conditional? Mm. I don't want to communicate that.
I mean, do you ever feel like the way to end the stalemate is we're not going to talk about it? There are certain things in our home. We're just not going to go there. We've tried. We know what you think. You know what we think. We're not going to have the conversation. Part of me is like, sometimes I'm a withdrawer, so I don't want conflict. Mm-hmm. Do I just love you in a way that says we can't have this conversation?
So I have a 40-year friendship. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a person we went to college together, Eastern Michigan University. We were in crew together. Mm-hmm. We've been through thick and thin. So the trust is there that you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. We do not talk about theology when it comes to something called Calvinism or Arminianism. If you understand what that means, does God control everything or does he allow free will to act? We've had this conversation forever. We both feel very strongly and can quote chapter and verse to support our positions. And we recently, I would say within the last 10 years, we avoid politics. Now, we talk about other theological issues. We talk about ethics. We talk about church life, our marriages. But it just doesn't go anywhere. And we have a 40-year track record. So I do think if a couple, a family can legitimately say, yeah, I think, I don't know if we need to go here. You have friends you can talk to. I think it's okay to bracket. I think if a marriage or a family has a million of those, then I might start to think, I don't know if bracketing needs to be your go-to position. But I do think it's okay to have one or two areas that we're just going to bracket. We're not going to go there.
Yeah.
So,
any thoughts, Sean? Because I got another question on that, unless you have a thought.
I think I generally agree with that. I think the relationship is going to shape it. Like, we have family members we'll see once a week out of a year. And it's like, let's have a good time, love on them, especially if they're not Christians. Of course, I'm not going to bring up politics because I know they're very different than what we view. But that's different, like with my wife. I can't think of any issue. I can't think of one. And the only reason I would say not, if I feel like, okay, have you understood my position? I've understood yours. We have talked this through, know exactly why we differ and where, and then we can move on, as opposed to like, I just can't go there. I don't want to talk about it. And then I go, okay, then there's something wrong there that is going to come up later and it's undermining the nature of the relationship.
Yeah, that's good. Mm. What about this? Your adult child has walked away from the faith you've instilled their whole life. Do you bring it up? You've talked about it a couple times. You know where they stand. They know what you stand. You've raised them that way. But now they're at a point where they're not really warming up to coming back. As a parent, do you let it go or do you bring it up? Because I know there's listeners right there like, that's where my kid is. I don't know what to do. Do I not talk about it? Because we've had those conversations. They didn't end well. Or do I keep trying to understand their perspective? I'm not trying to convince them, but I want to know what they think. And they feel like I'm trying to bring them back.
So I teach a family communication class, and there's the longest study done on children and faith called Faith and Families. He said with prodigal children, the number one principle is keep the door open and do not burn that bridge. So I think you let the child know, we love you, we accept you. Nothing's ever going to sever this relationship. And you know our values. My goodness, we don't need to talk about this anymore. Mom and I go to church every Sunday, and we know that you've kind of walked away. He says in his research that the vast majority of prodigals eventually come back. Mm. That really? If the door is kept open, there's a loving attitude, and the warmth of the father that particularly woos the hearts of the children. And there's a ton of reasons for that we can't go into. So I think, dads, you need to lead with love. Mm. And I think it's okay to say, now, you know, Mom and I don't approve of that. I mean, you know that.
But we love you.
I would encourage parents, if your kids have walked away, to think about having this conversation. Hey, son, or hey, daughter, I understand you don't believe anymore. Would you be willing to sit down with coffee with me and just talk about that journey? Mm. All I want to do is understand. Mm. When did you start having questions? Who did you talk with? What was helpful? What were the big questions? Are there any things you miss about your faith? Where are you at emotionally? How often do you think about God? How do you wish we had parented you differently?
That's good.
That can be painful. Mm. But I think that communicates to a kid, I love you first. I just want to understand. And that reinforces the point that Tim said, that this door is open. Mm. And then you just ask them. You know that I think this is true, and I want you to be a Christian. There's no hiding that. I can't. How much are you open to talking about this? Mm. And there's some kid, like Jesus let the rich young ruler walk away. Mm. If this person's like, I don't want to hear it ever, man, that's hard to say never, but that tells you their heart is not open, and that's going to burn bridges by pushing even little comments, poking the bear, even in, like, this is fun, but sometimes poking the bear can have a little edge to it.
Yeah, right.
And other kids would say, oh, I'm happy to talk about it. Mm. So you got to find out the backstory and understand it and just say, if you were in my shoes and you really believe this is true and you had a kid who walked away, what would you do?
Mm.
And just listen. It doesn't mean you have to do everything that they say, but if you don't at least understand where they're coming from first, you're going to have faulty assumptions and just lead to further conflict and probably burn more bridges.
Sean has a book with a great researcher, John Marriott, called Adrift.
We've had John on.
Called Set Adrift. Yeah, we did it together. We
were here. Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, so good. About
that. Yeah,
so right. That needs to be standard.
Deconstruction, the whole thing.
Yeah.
He's one of the best.
So
on
helpful.
That. And I would just add, I know Sean's saying this, but the way, Sean, you even said that, the tone of voice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Parents, did you hear that? That's how you have this conversation. Yeah. And when you hear your son or daughter responding and you feel something welling up within you to correct them or to say, no, that's not what you got to let it go, right? You got to be quiet. Listen.
That's the heart thing,
just
right?
Listen.
We're back to the heart preparation.
Yeah. Right. Talk post-conversation.
Okay, this is what we've learned from the Winsome Conviction Project. This one surprised us. We did this one conversation where we had two academics who just flat out disagreed with each other. But we brought them together for a conversation. We actually did the pre-conversation. We had a five-hour dinner where we heard the backstory. We prayed for the evening. The evening went so well. It was packed. Everybody was there. As this conversation is happening, I actually had the thought, how do you get nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize? You know, do they send you an email? Does somebody show up?
I've never had that thought in my life.
The two participants finished. They even said, this went remarkably well. 5 days later, I kid you not, we get a response from both. This was unfair. What you did was really bad for students to see. You manipulated us, and we were dumbfounded. Here's what happened. They both went back to their in-groups. Mm-hmm. By the way, many of those at the in-group weren't even at the event, and it wasn't recorded. So you either had to be there live or not. They weren't there, They even admitted they weren't there, but they said, oh, no, 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 no. Remember this about that person? Remember this about the person? Oh, you know, this and this and this. And they got deprogrammed and then came back and were actually upset at ourselves. So this is going nowhere. Mm. And the stalemate will not happen if we don't deal with our in-groups. And let me just say, I'm speaking to myself. If we're talking very uncharitably about other people in private, and it's okay, we have that wonderful little phrase, hey, this is just between you and me, right? Mm. And then we violate every communication principle Paul talks about, right? Slander, gossip, and the stalemate's going to happen. Mm. We've got to start to be charitable and be able to talk in favorable ways about people we disagree with. And we are spectacularly failing. And we're going to have courage to start calling people out. Like, we got to start saying, hey, the way we talk about the president in our in-group is not good. Like, we can disagree. We're committed to our political values, but we got to start toning things up. We got to start being more Christ-like in our in-house conversations.
Mm. So the private conversations, especially with your in-group.
How you talk about people privately is how you treat them publicly. Mm. People say that's not true. And I say, based on Daniel Goleman, emotional contagion, the negative feelings that you have created your in-group, it absolutely bleeds into a conversation and people pick up on it on the low road of the brain. Mm. This is Goldman. This is his emotional contagion. I really buy it. So yeah, you can put on a positive face, but those negative emotions, because you've cultivated them, stirred them in your in-group, it has to start with the house of God. We have to start being charitable in our private conversations.
When you just vent, there's sometimes you're just so frustrated, got to get it off my chest.
Yeah.
Is there a time and place for that? Ever?
I don't know.
Could you do that with your spouse?
I want to say there's probably good venting and bad venting.
That's what I think,
too. There's probably venting that crosses a line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Questioning the character of a person. Well, I do want to say with the people in our in-group who are friends and spouses, I should be able to vent because I'm really frustrated. And eventually, maybe my spouse comes back and says, hey, I'm glad you got that off your chest, but you know that probably wasn't fair towards our pastor or fair towards Sean. You know, or something like that. So I don't know, Sean. That's a great question. I want to probably say there's okay forms and there's probably forms that kind of cross the line a little bit of venting.
Would you ever do that, Sean, with your wife? Could you see yourself venting but saying something kind of nasty about someone?
Oh, I hope I don't say things that are nasty about somebody. Sometimes I've said to my wife, I say, honestly, here's how I feel.
I think that's
And then
good.
I'll express how I feel.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
And then I'll reflect on it and be like, you know, I would never want to say that publicly. And I don't love that I feel that way.
Yeah.
But that's honestly how I feel when I see this. And by the way, I mean, it is true. Sometimes people say things that are really dumb. Mm. Now, there's a difference between saying that person is dumb
right.
and what they said was dumb. And these are the kinds of distinctions that are important. But yeah, sure, I've vented to my wife and then apologized. And I'm not venting about her. It's about something else. But sometimes you just got to get it off your chest. But then it's worth, okay, why was that on my chest? Why is that in my heart? Is there deeper issues maybe that I need to wrestle with?
And I think, too,
would be the question.
When I've done that, too, I'm convicted by the Holy Spirit to come back.
Or by me.
Of how should we talk and what should our speech be like?
Can I make a spiritual point? I think it's okay to vent to God.
Yes.
I see it in the Psalms. Yeah. I see some amazing venting that is borderline, God, where were you?
Yeah.
Like, you were asleep when this was happening. The armies of Israel got slaughtered. And where were you? God can handle that.
Those are complaint psalms, right?
Yeah.
Some of the largest, if not the largest group of all the psalms are complaint psalms and prayers that are really honest.
Yeah. So I want to have a place for that.
And I would just add, this is a whole other topic and we're out of time, so we can't develop it, but I think you're going to agree with this. The post-talk, and this happens a lot in church world. As a pastor for 30 plus years, I've watched this happen. I don't think church people, Christians, are very good at this because we want to be graceful and tender. And so when I have a problem with Tim, often in church world, instead of going to Tim, I'll go to a friend.
Right.
or another staff member on the church staff, and we'll shut the door and we'll both talk about Tim. And sometimes we'll even say, we need to pray for Tim. And it's like a prayer. I mean, it's spiritualized, but it never gets to Tim. Mm. And we even had a policy at our church staff in the early days. If you come in and you bring up some other staff member, we're stopping it right then. I'm going to say, go get him. Let's all talk. They're not allowed to do this. This is, we call it first person communication. It's got to happen. That happened in our church staff with a couple hundred staff for 20 some years.
Was it positive? Did people receive that?
It was awesome. Yeah. It was hard because people don't do that. But it was like, I literally put my hand up like, go get Joe. Go get him. We're not going to talk about Joe without Joe here. And maybe you two are going to talk and I'm going to help you, but we're not having this conversation. And it was really healthy. Mm. I'm afraid to have that really hard conversation with somebody, so I'll go have it with somebody else. Yeah. And that's what you're saying. That's that post. Yeah. And it's my in-group, and they're going to agree with me. And next thing you know, you now have disunity.
And it's okay to get counsel.
Right.
Like, it's okay to sit down and say, I'm going to talk to Sean.
Right.
Like, I really do want it, but I don't know how to do it. It's totally different than me just saying things about Sean with no intention of ever going to see him. So I do think godly counsel would be good in certain situations.
Right, right.
And if the holidays come and you say some things because the bear was poked that you shouldn't have said, it might be a great idea to make a call, to have a conversation and just say, hey, I'm so sorry. I just blew up and I didn't mean to. And I hope that doesn't reflect how much I love you. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. And please forgive me.
Mm.
I think that always goes a long way, even as you guys have both demonstrated.
Mm. Thanks for modeling for us. You even differ on different things. Mm-hmm. And you love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you've revealed to the whole world, this is how you do it Christ-like.
We want to thank Dave and Ann Wilson and their team for another edition of Family Life Today. Although our programs are produced in America, the issues facing families like forgiveness, communication, and taking care of our kids transcend national borders. These issues profoundly affect relationships everywhere. In Australia, family life is known as Power to Change, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families, the kind of families that change the world one home at a time. A key part of our mission includes strengthening marriages and families all around the world. We want to do whatever we can to bring timeless truths to the challenges you face as you seek to strengthen your family and join us in changing the world. Do you have more questions on how to develop healthy marriages, how to be a better parent, how to make romance and sex work well, or how to grow spiritually? Check out some articles that will help challenge you to move forward well at our website. Go to families.powertochange.org.au for more information. You're invited back tomorrow at the same time for another Family Life Today presented by Power to Change in conjunction with this radio station.